So we're going to talk about Buddhism and consumerism. And the idea for this topic came because, when was it? 2002. I was invited to be a speaker at the second Gethsemane conference. And I think our theme was something about consumerism or materialism, something like that. I can't remember exactly. But anyway, I gave a talk about this topic there. And afterwards, many people wrote me, you know, they wanted to publish it or transcribe it or, you know, and it seemed to be quite a hit, much to my surprise, because I was quite, when pinpointing a lot of our foibles quite directly and quite straightforwardly. So I actually was surprised when people liked the talk so much, because I thought that some of them might be upset. So this is not a repeat of that talk, but it's just, I think a lot about this topic of, what does Buddhism have to say about the consumer culture that we live in, and how is that consumer culture influencing the Dharma in this country. So one of the chief things, if we look at the Buddha's life, okay, the Buddha lived as a monastic, and he lived very simply. In those days, the monastics had their robes, their alms bowl, a strainer to take the insects out of the water, a needle and thread, and a few other things, and that was about it. And so the whole emphasis that the Buddha set just from his own lifestyle was simplicity of life. Now, he also taught kings and queens and wealthy people who had a lot of stuff, okay? And he didn't say you have to get rid of all of your stuff in order to do practice. But what he was teaching was a healthy attitude of how to relate to material possessions and wealth in a healthy way, in a balanced way. And I think that this is something that's quite important for our world today, and especially for the U.S., considering that we're the richest country on the planet. We're also the one with the most mental suffering. I think we have far more mental suffering here than in India, for example, or in third world countries. And because we're setting a standard for the rest of the world that, personally speaking, I find to be quite damaging. I don't think we're exporting the best part of our culture. I think we're exporting the worst part, to tell you the truth. Because when I'm in other countries, when the people there finally get a TV, what do they see? Our evening shows and our movies of people in these incredibly luxurious houses, quarreling and fighting with each other. They see our movies with so much sex and so much violence, and they hear that America is great, and then they say, sex and violence, So I don't think we're really exporting, the good values that this country was founded on and that we aspire to live. I think it's important we come back to that. So what is a healthy relationship, with material possessions? We need them because we have bodies. So we need a certain level of material possessions to stay alive. But what the materialistic view teaches and what the consumer view teaches is not the immune material things just to stay alive, because we're well over that. Okay. But these things are the source of your happiness. And more than that, they are indicative of your success in life. Okay? So the more material possessions you have, the more money you have, the more successful you are. And of course, everybody wants to be successful. Now, is that true? That the more money you have and the more material things you have, the more successful you are? Now, we all shake our heads and say no. That's because we're here in a Buddhist talk. And you know that you better say no. But if you're out at a cocktail party and when you're talking to your friends, what do you think is indicative of success then? What do we talk about? Well, I live in this kind of community and I just remodeled my house. We got to do this, that, and the other thing. We talk about our cars. Cars are big symbols, aren't they? Of wealth. Of success. Yeah? We talk about our new car and where we got our new car. We talk about our country home if we have one, or our new sports equipment if we just got it. Okay, we talk about fine wine and fine tobacco. We talk about movies. We talk about nightclubs. Okay? So all these things that cost money. And we want to impress the people that we are with our level of financial success, so that they will think well of us, and so that we will fit in with them, and so that we can be regarded as successful. Do you do that or not? No, no, I must be talking to a good person. I don't need to give this talk about Buddhism and consumerism, do I? You all don't do it. Okay. I'll be talking about this, the Dharma community, as we go on in the talk. Yeah, and I think that's a very I share the same concerns that you do about what's happening. So I think it can be very helpful for us to really look at what we consider success to be. Yeah? What our standard of a successful life is. And how much do we buy into the materialistic, consumeristic hype that we all live in the middle of, that tells us that having material possessions is indicative of success. Because we all receive this conditioning. Yeah? And we imbibe it to a certain degree. And that's why she's talking about the problem that she's talking about, that even in Buddhist communities we find people influenced by this kind of ethic. Yeah? So let alone outside of Buddhist communities, then it's definitely going to be there. So I think we really need to look and examine our own conscience, our own self, and how much do I buy into that? And how much do I feel okay about my income and my possessions and so on and so forth? Or how much do I feel like I need more and better in order to fit in with the people around me? Because this is what I hear a lot from parents who come to Buddhism. Oh, I want to live very simply. I don't think material things are indicative of success. I want to live very simply. But I have children, And my children go to school, and all their friends wear designer clothes, and their friends have iPods, and their friends have this, and their friends have that, and their friends go here and there. And I don't want my 7-year-old to feel like they live in a family that doesn't fit in with everybody else. So I have to go along with the culture. You know, and I have to get my 7-year-old this, that, and the other thing, so that, you know, because I have kids and I want them to fit in. I hear this a lot. Do I believe it? You know, sometimes I think that children run the country. And children definitely run families. They definitely tell their parents what to do. And parents ask for children's permission. You know, you see it. Oh, we're going to go here today. Is this okay with you, you know, Susie? Now, what do you want to eat? Do you like this? Do you want that? You know, and the children want this. The children want that. So-and-so has it. Why can't I? Whine the children. And the parents dutifully go out and get it. Now, all the time saying, well, I really don't believe in all of this. I really don't want to do it. Then why are they doing it? Well, because I don't want my children to feel like they don't fit in with all their friends. Why not? Yeah? Put it this way. Does anybody ever feel like they fit in? How many people, let me just ask, how many of you in high school felt like you fit in? Can I see hands of people who felt in high school like they fit in?
I went to high school in India. So I didn't really fit in, but I came back here and went to college and I moved for
again.
I felt like a
regular,
I
was
on the
whole time. Yeah, come here. But you know, all of us in high school felt like we didn't fit in. All of us. Even the kids that we look at as the popular ones that everybody likes, it blew me away when I, years after I graduated high school, when I talked to some of the kids that I thought were the real popular ones, you know, because I didn't fit in, and I talked to them, and they felt like they didn't fit in either. It was incredible to me. You know, so nobody feels like they fit in, and yet everybody is trying to do what they think other people think they should do to fit in. Okay, is this craziness? Yes. Why are we letting our children do it? Why are parents doing it themselves? Why do we have so little self-confidence about living in a way that is important to us? Yeah? If we don't value those things, and we see, you know, I mean, why does a 7-year-old need designer clothes? Why does a 17-year-old need designer clothes? I don't wear designer clothes, and I'm probably happier than all those people. So, why do we feel like we don't believe in what society does, but we go along with it anyway? I think it's because we actually believe it, and we're afraid to really live according to what we feel is the correct way to live. Okay? And so I think it takes a bit of courage to really live according to the values and principles that we think are correct. Yeah? And everybody else might have this and that, but it doesn't mean that we need to, and it doesn't mean we need to give it to the kids either. Yeah? I think one of the most important things that parents teach their children is how to deal with the frustration of not getting everything you want. Don't you think that's an important thing to teach kids? Yeah? But I don't think parents often think of that, and instead they try and get their kids everything. But then the kids never learn how to deal with the frustration of not getting what they want. And they never learn to think that maybe other people could use the things that they have. And, you know, we never teach kids about over-consuming and getting stuff that they don't need. No, instead we just get more and more stuff. I was thinking about it the other day. Because I don't know about you, but when I grew up, when my shoes broke, we took the shoes to the shoe repair. And I didn't grow up in a low-income family. I grew up in the middle class. But when our shoes broke, we took them to the shoe repair and got them fixed. And I was thinking, nowadays, you don't see any shoe repairs. When people's shoes get old, they throw them away. And in fact, they usually don't wait for their shoes to get old before they throw them away. But they continue to buy new things and new things and new things. Now, have you seen this kind of change from when we were little? And, you know, living in the Abbey, we have a number of people who come stay with us. And I really saw with the young people who come stay with us, you know, the computer printer broke. Well, you just put it in the closet and forget about it and go buy a new one. Yeah, something breaks, you don't bother getting it fixed. You go buy a new one. And you don't bother to give away your thing that broke to somebody who might be able to use it and fix it. Fix it and use it in that order. You know, you just put it in the closet, forget about it, and get a new one for yourself. And I thought, my goodness, you know, this is quite different than when I grew up. You know, this whole mentality of just consuming, you know, not thinking to repair, not thinking to reuse, okay, not thinking to cut back. And as a result, as a country, we're, you know, using up more than our fair share of the world's resources, and yet we're very greedily wanting access to more of the world's resources. And I think this is one of the major sources of the Iraq War. You know, if there weren't oil in Iraq, America would not care beans about it. But in fighting the war in Iraq, we don't want to cut down on our lifestyle at all. You know, carpool, why should I carpool? I want to get in my car and go where I want to go, exactly when I want to do it. Yeah, I don't complain about the high gas prices, but I don't want to carpool. I don't want to use public transportation, except in New York City. But outside of there, you know. And I was reading something recently that more and more people are concerned about global warming, you know, but nobody really wants to cut back on their use of resources. Yeah. We all want to be able to consume and to drive here and there and do everything, but we don't want the global warming to happen. So, you know, from a Buddhist perspective, what we're seeing is people who are quite self-centered, you know, and very greedy about material things, thinking the material things are going to make them happy, and then, of course, when they don't get what they want, getting angry and upset. So here we, in Buddhism, we think about the three poisonous attitudes of ignorance, clinging, attachment, and anger. Here they are. You know, ignorance, thinking material things are going to bring you happy, bring you happiness, make you successful. Attachment, therefore clinging on to them. Yeah, trying to get more, trying to get better. And then anger, hostility, when we can't get what we want, getting upset. We get upset as individuals, we get upset as countries. Yeah, but restraining ourselves, restraining our consumption, that thought doesn't even enter our mind. And, you know, I lived many years in India. India is kind of like my home in the heart, really. I love that country. And when I lived in India, if you had a plastic bag, you held on to that plastic bag. Now they throw the plastic bags all over. But when I first went to India, which was in 1973, and then I lived there a lot in the late 70s, early 80s, when you had a plastic bag, you really held on to it. And you didn't see stuff thrown out all over the place. If you had a tin can, you saved it. Tin cans were precious. You know, you could keep your beans in them. You could plant flowers in them. You could do so much with a tin can. Yeah. And so we, you know, I learned to use things and reuse them. When I lived in India, I also was quite poor. And so I was very carefully with how I used my resources because I didn't have much money. And I also noticed when I developed the habit when I was there, and also from my family, that, you know, you don't throw food out. And in India, at least then, you never saw food on the ground. If there were a fruit-bearing tree, you never saw old apples or pears or anything, you know, on the ground. In America, people have fruit-bearing trees in the autumn, you know, the fruit falls and they don't use it. And it's really rather amazing. And yet, in this country, we feel poor. People feel poor. How many of you feel like you're financially secure? Yeah? Maybe one person? How many do people feel like they really have enough? Couldn't you use a little bit more? Wouldn't a little bit more be nice? No? So where was I? I lost my train of thought. Where was
Couldn't we all use a little more?
Yes, couldn't we all use a little bit more? Good. I'm glad you were thinking about it. Yeah. So we do have that mentality, don't we? You know, we wouldn't mind a little bit more. We wouldn't mind a little bit better. Somebody just interviewed me right before here for a magazine called More. Yeah? And then there was another magazine called Self that wanted to use some of my material. And their bylaw was, it's all about you. And I wrote and I said, you can use my material, but I don't believe in your byline, you know, because I'm trying to cultivate the heart that it's all about others, not that it's all about me. Anyway, so I think we have to look here at what's going on in our mind and what the effects of our attachment to material possessions are, okay? Because we think that all this will bring us happiness. It doesn't. Yeah, like I was saying before, we need a certain amount to live, but do we need the excess that we have? I don't think we do. And wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to teach children to give their things away? Yeah. And there's a Jewish custom. A lot of Jewish families do with their kids. And every week, the child puts some money away, you know, in a piggy bank or whatever. And then after some time, it's given to a charity. And I think that what is very special about this, you know, if you do this kind of thing with kids, is not that you write out a check and send it to the charity, but you take your child down to where the charity is so that they see the people who have cerebral palsy, or they see the war vets, or they see, you know, the unfortunate kids. And they give their own things to these people with their own hands. So the kids can learn to value what they do have. You know? When I see sometimes the way that young people treat their stuff, it's really appalling to me. I have some nieces and, you know, I hope they don't listen to this talk. I don't think they will. If they do, maybe it'll help them. But, you know, I remember going in their room, you know, and the clothes are just all over the place. And I thought, you know, when I lived in India, you never see anything like that. Never, ever, ever. I mean, India's getting richer now, and we were exporting our bad values to them. But, you know, you never really see that. And it made me think, you know, how kids in this country want more and want better, but they don't value what they have. And so I've always thought it would be an how much different would America be if it was required for all teenagers to go and spend 6 months in a third world country? Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to do for our country and to do for other countries? You know, to enlarge people's perspective so they didn't just think about their own life and what they're missing themselves, but they opened their eyes to see how other people live and saw other cultures and saw how people could be very happy with much less. Okay? So I think for kids to get that message, adults have to have it. Okay? So what does that mean? It means that when we go to places, we don't care if we're wearing the same clothes that we wore last time the people saw us. Okay. But we care about that. You can't go to some place and wear the same thing that you wore last time. Yeah. And when you go to work, you've got to change your clothes every day. You can't wear the same thing every day. People think that you're strange. Yeah. When my nieces were young, I remember going to their school. One of my nieces was like 7 or 8. She said, "Why do you wear the same clothes every day?" Even at that age, learning that you're not supposed to wear the same clothes every day. Something's wrong with you if you do. Okay? So look at how much we ourselves are, you know, imbibed with that kind of viewpoint, even from the time we're quite young. And then, of course, the whole thing about recycling, which I think is incredibly important that we recycle. And yet, when I talk to people, again, they don't seem to get it, you know, that recycling and reducing consumption concerns them. I was in Mexico a few years back. I go there quite often to teach. And I was having lunch with two people who were both professors at a university in the ecology department. So they taught all about ecology and preserving the environment, and they cared very much about the environment. And they were telling me that one day their child came home from school and said, "Mom and Dad, how come we aren't recycling?" And they said that they realized that they had never thought of recycling. For all of their talk about preserving the environment, it never dawned on them that their family should recycle. You know, preserving the environment was things that the legislatures should take care of and make laws to govern, you know, fuel consumption by certain corporations. But they never thought on a personal level that the destruction of the environment depended on what they did as a family. Yeah? And so for all of us, you know, to look at that, and I can see, you know, we have a very strong American custom of when we want something, we go out and buy it ASAP. Okay? You feel like having cookies, you walk out of your house, get in the car, get in the subway, go wherever you need to do, get your cookies, come home. The next day, you want something else, you go out and buy it. The next day, you want something else, you go out and buy it. Okay? And I see how much of a habit this is because at the Abbey, at Shavasti Abbey where I live, we don't go out like that. And we have a policy that we only go out and get things, building materials and things that we need for the house when we have a really big list. That just the fact that we need something today is not good enough reason to drive to the today and then the next day drive and then the next day drive. Okay? And I can see that when people come to the Abbey and if they're doing a project and they need something, the idea of waiting a little bit until we have a big enough list is like, well, why? Why would you do that? Yeah? And we eat only the food that's offered to us. And so sometimes visitors come and they cook and we don't have an ingredient, what they want to put in their food. And they say, well, I want to go to the store and get this. And I have to say, no, we don't do that. What do you mean you don't do that? You know, how can you want it? You just go get it. No, we don't. Okay? Because it's a 20-minute trip to town. We use a lot of fuel. If we go to town every day, you know, we burn up so much fuel uselessly. Yeah. So it's, you know, I can see sometimes when people come to the Abbey, you know, and these people who are Buddhists or who are interested in Buddhism, who are usually more aware of social issues, I find recyclable things in the garbage that they've thrown out. I have to pull them out of the garbage and take them into our recycling bin, you know? Because people don't think, and if they don't recycle at the Abbey, for sure they're not recycling at home. Yeah? So this is something so easy that really influences our atmosphere, our country and our world. And I think we really have to think of future generations. And if you believe in rebirth, to think that we might be reborn in those future generations when Manhattan is covered with water because, you know, the polar ice caps melted and whatever. Okay? So I see it very much as part of my spiritual practice, taking care of the environment. Okay? To me, that if I'm going to really live according to my spiritual values, then I have to do what I can do on a personal level to take care of the environment. And if I'm going to live according to my spiritual values, I have to also reduce consumption. So at the Abbey, when we need different things, for example, we needed some bed frames not too long ago, we put it on a wish list, and then hoping that somebody has extra stuff at their house that they'll send us, you know, rather than it just sitting in their house and collecting dust, yeah, that send it. So our, you know, most of what we have is furnished by things that other people very kindly gave to us. And I think that that's appropriate for us. And it's also very helpful. I kind of have to laugh when I go in some of the rooms because we have blankets from that I used as a teenager, you know, that my mom gave to us. We have some bedspreads that my brother, who's 3 years younger than me, from when he was like in first and second grade, you know, and those things that got used in the family and got passed down to the Abbey. So I think this is the way it should be, that we reuse things instead of always going out and buying new stuff. Yeah? And that this is our personal responsibility and is completely fitting in for our spiritual practice. Because otherwise our spiritual practice is a lot of nice ideas, but when it comes to us being inconvenienced, we don't want to be. Okay?